There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
What about that one pole?
Oh, give me that one pole.
Now when I get upset, I just go back into landslides in my head.
Oh,
that's
yes.
That's what I discovered. If you ever get really upset, just become the song Landslides for about 30 seconds.
I love Stevie Nicks.
The landslides bring you down. Oh, I should have worn a diaper. All the cocaine up my butthole made it real big.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Goodness.
The mic is on. That ruined this take.
All right. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everybody. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
I'm Stevie Nicks.
Hey, Stevie. Thanks so much for being here. How you doing? You recovering from the hard relationship?
Yeah. I was pretty sad about it, but now I'm a witch woman.
What I heard about Stevie Nicks is what's really cool is that when she goes into hotel rooms, she puts various colored, like sashes.
Scarves?
Scarves all over everything in order to make it her environment. And I think that that is a thing that I'm going to start doing, but instead of scarves, it's going to be old fast food bags.
Oh, I think you already do that,
yes.
Don't you?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, speaking of hotels, we want to thank the Benson Ball. What a great weekend we had.
Yeah, over in Washington, D.C., we had an amazing weekend out there. We went to the D.C. Improv sold out show.
Yes.
Met so many amazing fans after the show. You guys are fucking amazing. You're the best.
Yeah.
And we went, got fancy whiskey tastings, Marcus and I, and we drank 100-year-old booze.
Mm. I went to a bar with the fans called the Big Hunt. Emphasis on the H, Hunt.
Thank you.
I don't know why they named it that. All right. So, yeah, thanks, everyone, for coming out to Washington, D.C.
And just so everybody knows, we have a second show booked in Portland. We're doing an early show now, so if you guys missed out on the first show, go get tickets at cavecomedyradio.com/live.
It's interesting that we're doing the plugs first in an episode like today.
Well, I'm gonna channel the fans right now and be like, get to the death!
This episode is going to be a problematic fate. That's
yes.
Another term I've learned from Tumblr. That is this is going to be very difficult to swallow. This is Richard Chase Part 2, Richard the Vampire of Sacramento Chase, which you don't get that nickname for just wearing a cape.
I'm going to say the nickname seems large. Richard the Sacramento Vampire Chase. That's a lot to say.
Yeah. Yeah,
he crammed a lot.
He crammed a lot in there. He lived a Vlad Dracul lifestyle in about 5 days, and that's hard to do. Because Vlad the Dracul's whole lifestyle took a lot of infrastructure.
By the way, if you call him Dracul's, I'm allowed to say UFOs.
No, his name is Vlad Dracul.
Ugh, it sounds like a dumb Nestle chocolate drink.
He was Romanian.
All right, so Richard Chase, part two. Marcus, what do we got?
All right, we left off after the murder of Ambrose Griffin, the drive-by murder, Richard Chase's very first victim. And between the first murder and the second, Chase's bloodlust intensified. A neighbor named Don Larson saw him carry three animals on different occasions into his apartment, two dogs and a cat, respectively. She never saw the animals ever again.
It's like he was running his own hot dog factory.
That's awful. I mean, I feel like it's one of the lost comic strips of Marmaduke. You know, when Marmaduke was abducted by Richard Chase.
It's like, oh, you're a pretty big dog. I bet you got just enough blood to make me normal again. Oh, God, he's just so full of antics. You're knocking over my blender. That's the baby guts I had. You're ruining my Wednesday.
Marmaduke.
Let's talk about this a little bit. So between his first murder, when he shot Ambrose, his last name Ambrose, correct?
Ambrose Griffin.
Ambrose Griffin. When they shot him, it's like this was sort of him testing himself. He had built up to this point, we know. He had started shooting things around the neighborhood. He had bought a gun. And between that, and then he shot his neighbor, right? He got a thrill because it was like a neighbor of his. Oh, this is all within like a mile of his apartment.
Right.
And so he walked around this time kind of amping himself up. In the meantime, he's also trying to be super normal to his family. He's shaved. He's cut his hair. He's walking around saying like, I'm really thinking about getting a job. But they don't understand that job is actually being a vampire, which also is interesting. You don't need an application for.
No, you don't. Whatever it is, it's signed in blood, though.
Yes. And he started purchasing animals. Up until this point, yes, he was taking it. And so to a point where he was starting getting crossed off the lists at pet stores. Also, dogs would viciously bark at him on the street. Like, literally, he would go to adopt new animals that he was going to kill, and the animals would recoil from him like they were reading something from him. This is a very dangerous person. He's already killed one person. And so apparently, he adopted a dog over a thing like Craigslist through a classified ad. He got the dog back to the house, killed it, drank its blood, then called the woman and described how the dog died anonymously from payphones and saying all this like fucked up shit, stuff only she would know, quote unquote, about the dog, which I don't know what that is. But yes, so he's really amping himself up.
Yeah.
I gotta say, these pet store employees didn't seem to be doing their jobs. How many cats do you need in a week before you get crossed off the list? You get one dog every 5 years. That's the rule.
So on January 23rd, 1978, Richard Chase decided it was time to get up close and personal with his first human blood victim. He began at 2909 Burney Street, walking up to the house of a woman named Jean Layton, and he tried her patio door. The door was locked, so he moved on to the windows. When he found that they were locked as well, he went to the back door where Jean was staring out. The two came face to face through the glass. And she said that he stared at her with no emotion, as if he was looking at a car he was thinking about buying.
I have a lot of emotion when I think about purchasing something, so that's where we're going. I'd be like, ooh.
Yeah, buying a car is extremely emotional.
It seems fun.
Yeah, so he then lit a cigarette and walked away through her backyard. From Jean's house, Richard walked down the street and 30 minutes later walked into the unlocked house of Robert and Barbara Edwards. Now, this is another weird vampiric twist to the Richard Chase story.
But this is part of where he gets the nickname of the Vampire of Sacramento.
Right. So years later, Richard told FBI profiler Robert Ressler that when he went out to murder, he only went to houses that were unlocked, not because it was easier, but because he thought that a locked house meant that he was not welcome, which plays on the belief that vampires can only enter one's home if the resident invites said vampire inside.
That is my favorite rule of all the vampire lore, is that you just have to be... Courtesy counts.
No!
And the vampire takes it seriously.
Can I please come inside?
No, you cannot.
All right.
Nope.
I guess I'll go to the Burger King.
If they let you in.
No. I'm so hungry.
So Robert and Barbara, they came home from grocery shopping, opened the door, and found the filthy, scraggly Chase standing in the hallway.
Can I be your butler? I'm looking for a job. I told my parents I'd come back with a job.
Well, it does kind of bring us into another class if we have a butler, honey.
I'll be the butler that everyone loves, like Mr. Belvedere.
Just like that.
So apparently, I guess he was putting forth some semblance of normalcy to his parents, but every person who saw him over the course of these few days just described him as straggly, absolutely filthy.
Like, the words unhinged. Uh-huh. When the word unhinged is used about you 4 or 5 times in a description,
right?
You need to talk to someone. You need a makeover, first of all, please.
Yes, downward spiral.
Yeah. So when Robert and Barbara saw Richard, they chased him around the house for a while.
He was slipping on blood.
Before Richard finally got past them and ran out the front door. Now, Richard had intended to steal a few things, as they found a bag filled with items such as rings, a tape player, a decorative dagger, and a stethoscope.
Why did they have these things?
We've all got weird shit in our house.
Decorative dagger?
We do, because that's us.
I don't have a decorative dagger. I barely have a butter knife.
That's true. You have no silverware or working gas in your home.
You don't need it if you don't cook.
But Richard had also left something behind.
Uh-oh.
Now, when the couple walked into their baby's bedroom, they found that Richard had opened up the chest of drawers and urinated on all the baby's clothes, then had walked over to the bed and took a nice big dump right square in the middle.
Oh, look, Davy. Now you have a little brother.
You're holding the dump?
Yes. No, yes.
Is that what, that's what you want to do right now? That's your act out that you chose?
Yes.
Did you put eyes on the dump?
Yes, little googly eyes, like an emoji. That's really unfortunate. But also,
it's
it shows
disgusting.
He's not well.
Well,
not
isn't well. This exactly what Albert Fish would have done in this in a similar situation?
Literally, exactly.
He's
like
a dumper.
What he did. I also could have just been scared and left a shit like he's a squid, you know, and just shooting out ink.
I don't think he was. My God, what is it with just leaving the fecal matter behind?
Well, it's about power and degradation of a subject. It's showing that it's about going in there and showing literally, I shit on this thing. I shit on a thing that you find sacred in order to get, like, try to get his wiener up.
Well, what this is all about, what this day is all about is escalation. Is that a lot of killers, they have a sort of escalation that may take months or even years. Richard's doing all this in one day.
This is like Baby's Day Out, but ending in the worst possible way. I heard it's the director's cut of Baby's Day Out.
Yeah, it's like Kiefer Sutherland in the movie, in the TV show 24.
Also, but remember,
hour three involves pissing on a dresser and taking a dump in a room.
In if it was playing in France,
I guess that's hour 2, 3, 4, and 5.
The pipi na caca most degradation. But he is obviously very ill. But you also remember, because we were talking about how he was being relatively normal to his parents. The only reasons why they say that he was acting normal is because he wasn't talking about how hot his blood was.
Well, he's like Donald Trump. You start with like talking about, you know, random newscasters' vaginas, and then you escalate to grabbing them in that vagina.
The bar is extremely
very low
for Richard Chase.
They watched him murder their family pet and cover himself with the blood of the pet, and no one said anything and sent him to a hospital. So now it's just like, all right, as long as he's wearing pants.
Not covered in dog blood.
Now, after the break-in attempt, Richard was thirsty, so he went to the store to grab himself an orange soda, which was his favorite, besides blood.
This is where it's oddly similar to you. I also feel that he would also really enjoy urine brew.
Urine brew.
Well, I prefer grape soda over all of them. Yeah, see, urine brew is more of a bubblegum flavor than an orange flavor. It's just colored orange.
Well, why did you get him talking about this?
I'm sorry.
Now, there, while he was at the store, he ran into an old classmate of his, a one Miss Nancy Holden. Chase walked up to her and said,
"Were you on the motorcycle when Kurt was killed? Because that would have been fucking awesome."
Who are you?
Oh, it's Richie! You don't remember good old screaming blood-hungry Richie? Tell me, are your bones in your face backwards? Because you look lovely!
Oh, Richie!
Yeah,
hey, Richie! So,
that's what they say, haven't changed a day!
You
haven't! Changed a day! Just, can I eat your feet?
Yes.
Because that's... I feel if I eat your feet, I'll get new feet!
Orange soda, huh?
Yeah, love it!
Well, Nancy had, in fact, dated a guy in high school named Kurt, who had died in a motorcycle accident, but Nancy barely recognized Richard, as he was filthy, smelly, skinnier than usual, and wearing a bright orange ski parka.
That was covered in dried blood.
Yeah, it was covered in brown stains, because as we talk about on the show, blood dries brown. So most people, when they see a blood stain, they don't immediately recognize it as a blood stain.
So the other option is that he's covered in shit.
Well,
so
it varies. It could be gravy.
This is right after he urinated in a home and took a dump and was chased around a home.
Immediately after, right to, like 30 minutes. Minutes after.
What were the people that just recently chased him? Did they call the police how did they lose him?
I mean, they called the police because, well, that's the thing, is that Richard Chase, slippery dude.
Slippery, huh?
You also remember, this is the 70s. There's a lot of hippies. The Vietnam War's winding down. The hippie movement is grinding into a weird gray existence of people just washed out on acid. This probably happens 2 or 3 times a week, and they just have like a hippie sweeping broom, like get off the porch. Yeah. But apparently when he was running through the house, I forgot this, when they were screaming stop, stop, he screamed, "I was taking a shortcut." That's true.
A strange shortcut to the deli, I guess.
Well, Nancy finally broke free, but Richard followed her outside asking for a ride. Nancy managed to get in her car, start the engine, and drive off just as Richard was about to open the passenger side door.
Do you think, though, in some reverse way, he's like watching Nancy, and Nancy and him are having one of those see you next year moments where the romantic music's playing, and Nancy's like, "Richie, I just kind of, I was just wondering when I was going to see you again. I knew you were in the neighborhood. And then he imagined himself in a full tuxedo with, like, flowers covered in blood. And he just thought he was, like, offered to be in the car, like she was inviting him in the car.
It does seem like a fantasy that would come out of Jim Carrey's character from Dumb and Dumber.
Well, that's the thing, is that we don't really know what intentions Richard had with Nancy Holden. Like, we really don't. I mean,
I think he was just looking for a ride.
He might have been looking for a ride. I think he also might have been looking to kill.
Yeah, why wouldn't we assume he's looking to kill?
Well, it's because he would switch on and off really hard. When they were talked about when he would when he killed Ambrose the first time, he just went home and watched TV all day.
Yeah, like, but he would still switch off. Them.
But he would switch off. Like, he would go into a frenzy, and then, like, a channel flipped. And then all of a sudden he's acting like everything's all normal.
I am assuming that he is going to kill everyone he's in contact with.
Well, he started with try and lock doors. He graduated to burglary. He moved on to harassment and a possible kidnapping attempt, because don't forget, he had a .22 pistol in his shoulder holster this entire time.
And I also imagine he was not that careful with it. I imagine he's got the jacket flapping open. He's chugging out orange soda covered in dried blood. She sees the fucking gun holster slapping against his belly. Like, that's hard. That's hard to say yes to, like, yeah, sure, I'll give you a ride.
You need to present him to Congress and talk about conceal and carry. And be like, this is what it looks like.
Well, because he went and he bought a gun for $69, so which tapped out all of his funds, and then he asked his mom to buy him the holster, and she said no, so he stole it from a thrift store.
That's I guess he had the gun. You can get whatever you want with it.
Yeah, gun first. So after
gun
first. So after all of that, he finally landed on murder at 2360 Tioga Way. Ugh. And we do know that at this point his motive was no longer robbery, because a blue van was parked in the driveway, clearly marking that someone was home. Now, what we don't know is why he chose that house specifically. The only explanation, if there is one at all, is that Richard recognized the van from his earlier trip to the store where his victim, Teresa Wallen, had just visited about an hour before Richard showed up at her house.
Because now what we know about Richard is that he views things symbolically as well. And I think because he's now deeply schizophrenic, which you can imagine, it's like when you're now deep, you're essentially tripping all the time. And when you're tripping, things hold sort of psychological and symbolic meaning. Where you saw the cat, you saw that van before.
Right.
Now he sees the van here
it's
at this
a sign,
house.
Huh?
It's like a sign. I should go in this house. Or it was completely fucking random. Which is just the truth. And it's like, most of the time, serial killers are not completely random. Most of the time, serial killers case their victims.
Well,
they watch them. Well, it's a lot of the times.
Yeah, but Richard Chase was not like that at all.
No.
Like, he is the absolute textbook definition of the disorganized serial killer.
Well, he's somewhere between the Tasmanian devil and him. You know what I mean? He's the Tasmanian devil.
I love the Tasmanian devil.
But he was cute.
Well, he wasn't that cute. He'd mess you up.
Yeah, like Richard Chase.
Absolutely. He never asked permission to come into your house.
Richard Chase kind of looks like Marcus.
I know.
He's been described as cute. And also is a bloodthirsty, blood-hungry maniac.
I've been trying not to think about how much Richard Chase looks like Marcus, but now that you brought it up.
Why did you say that I'm a bloodthirsty maniac?
I'm just saying.
He just plays with bones, Henry.
Yeah. He's like the Tasmanian devil.
I'm post-blood.
Now you are.
Marcus post-blood parts. All right, so it makes sense. The van triggered something. He's like, wow, I know that van. Let's go in.
Mm-hmm, more than likely. Now, Richard walked up to the door, took his .22 caliber handgun from his leather shoulder holster, cocked it, took the bullet he ejected, and placed it in Teresa's mailbox before opening the door. There he found Teresa Wallen on her way outside with a bag of garbage in her hand. When Richard pointed the gun at Teresa, she dropped the bag and held up her hand just as Richard began firing the gun. The first bullet entered her palm, traveled up her arm, exited her elbow, and nicked her neck. The second went through the top part of her skull, and she dropped to the ground. Richard then walked up to her and fired one more bullet into her temple from 6 inches away. A mercy, considering what was still to come.
Because now we're looking at, you know, between product and process killers. He is a product killer. He wanted to kill people as fast as humanly possible so that he could get a hold of the body. He did not want the struggle. That's not where the power was.
He wanted immediate control of the situation.
Yes, because he also was a weak person. Like, he was very scrawny, skinny. Like, he's not going to wrestle somebody to the ground.
Well, he looked weak, but he was actually surprisingly strong.
Okay, so she did not have, I mean, a very unfortunate terrible demise, but not as terrible as it could have been, I suppose.
Absolutely not, especially considering what he's going to do now. Richard picked up Teresa's body by the shoulders and dragged her to the bedroom, leaving a long, dark streak of blood on the floor. And after he'd laid her down, he walked back to the kitchen, got a knife, and picked up an empty yogurt cup that he had spilled out of the garbage that Teresa had dropped. Richard walked back to the bedroom and started work on the body. Mm. He first pulled her sweater over her shoulders and cut off her left nipple. He stabbed her torso so hard he split open her sternum and sliced the left side of her stomach open. He reached inside the wound and pulled out the intestines until the organs were exposed. Oof. He stabbed the organs 8 more times, so deep that the knife came out through her back. The only organs he left unscathed were the kidneys. He then used the empty yogurt cup to gather blood from Teresa's stomach cavity and drank it. He then went to the bathroom and smeared his face and hands with that same blood. The final indignation came when Chase walked outside after all of this, picked up a pile of dog feces from the yard, and shoved it in Teresa's mouth. But worst of all, when an autopsy on Teresa was performed, it was discovered that she was 6 weeks pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
God.
Well, that's absolutely brutal.
Can we get a bit of a palate cleanser after that so we can continue on with the podcast, Marcus?
Sorry. I farted.
It's Fat Bastard from Austin Powers.
That's the palate cleanser?
Yeah, play another sound clip, Marcus. That's it.
You wanna
play another one.
Get in my
not
belly!
A good one. Not a good one.
I don't
one.
Think that is
not
a good one.
Not a good one.
One.
That is inappropriate.
All right. I don't think the palate cleanser really worked in this situation. It might have made things worse.
That is very unfortunate. Whew.
All right. So, super intense. He's absolutely off his rocker. Totally insane at this point.
So, when he finished his crime, he left there. He's literally around the corner from his apartment.
Wow.
Went into his own apartment and then just turned on the TV, started watching TV. He just loved TV.
Sanford and Sons or something like that. Well, you know what? I mean, to her family, just unbelievably awful. I can't imagine how I would feel if that's how a loved one is treated, post-mortem. I guess thank God it was post-mortem,
yeah.
I suppose. But that's awful, brutal stuff. And we do not condone it.
Thank you, Kissel.
No problem.
I'm
just saying. I don't. Oh,
it was her husband, the founder. Came home.
Oh, poor guy.
And found her like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Richard Chase is a terrible. He's an awful human being.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah. He's fucking dead. He's in hell right now. It's fucking getting torn apart by demons.
Yes.
Now, like with most serial murders, police had no immediate leads on the murder of Teresa Wallen, because the vast majority of murders are perpetrated by someone that the victim knows. So when you've got a murder like this with no apparent motive, it's very difficult to know where to begin.
Obviously, because a crime of this intensity is also viewed as like either someone must have hated her or someone is a complete and total psychopath.
Yeah. And they have to really, really, really hate someone to do something that bad.
Yeah.
The only thing, like the family, her husband's sister thought that the crime was perpetrated by one of the husband's like ex-girlfriends.
Jesus
because they
Christ.
Heard that the ex-girlfriend was into a satanic cult. Of course, this is 1978. Everybody thinks that everybody's in a fucking satanic
cult.
They
were just in the beginnings of heavy metal. They're having a great time. They're sexy and cool and wearing black and having a great time. They're just the first people out of the hippie movement. So don't blame the satanic cult people. I don't mean to get defensive.
I'm gonna say if I knew someone wasn't a satanic cult that wasn't ex-girlfriend of the of the husband of the wife, I would sniff around, just make sure.
Well, even though it was hard to know where to begin, that's not to say that the Sacramento Police Department didn't try, particularly the lead detective, Lieutenant Ray Biondi, who wrote the book from which much of the research for this series is taken from. The book is called The Vampire Killer, and it is solid true crime writing. If you like cop-written books, man, this is the one for you.
Yeah, if you like cop, where it's not just been like, yeah, and then me and the boys, we worked them over a little bit, and then we got free ice cream cone because we're the police. Yay, free ice cream.
My goodness. So the cops in this situation, Marcus, what are you giving them 5 out of 5 stars?
I'm giving them 5 out of 5, man. I'm calling these guys super cops.
They worked really hard on this case.
Yeah, they actually did. Now, the only clues that police had were a set of footprints in a pool of Teresa's blood, the bullet that ended her life, and a series of rings near Teresa's body that appeared to be from a bucket or pan that had been set on the floor, which implies that Richard Chase
brought his own bucket.
Either brought his own bucket or had taken one of the buckets from the kitchen, which is much more likely.
Okay.
But yeah, because he's not organized enough to bring a bucket with him. Like,
think about it, though. If you're going to bring one thing, and if your job is that you're a vampire, one of the things you need is a bucket. And then
what do you need
also,
the bucket for?
For your doggy bag.
I guess so.
Yeah, well, I mean, no one reported him. The friend at Nancy Holden didn't report him having a bucket at the supermarket. That would have been a detail that she would have remembered.
Her clang, having fun bucket. With my bucket. Yeah. Do you remember when your boyfriend died? Sure do. I get hard from it. Huh. Anyways, can you hold my bucket for a second? These fucking guts are very heavy.
Orange soda. I always liked Richie.
Before police would even know Richard Chase's name, he would claim four more victims on January 27th, 1978. Richard's possible search for the right house would begin days earlier on January 24th. And I say possible because while we don't actually know if Richard was casing houses or just acting on a schizophrenic impulse, he started going door to door asking for old magazines, specifically back issues of Mad Magazine and Cosmo.
Mad Magazine was hilarious at the time. This was the golden age of Mad Magazine.
It really was. I have a whole collection of mid to late 70s Mad Magazines.
This is the time when you want it. And Cosmo is all about learning how to eat pussy. And so he's just trying to connect. He's trying to date.
I don't know. Maybe if I found out that I wrote Mad Magazine and drew the great funny comics in Mad Magazine, I'd be quite disheartened to know Richard Chase loved them.
But what if you found
Richard? I don't want to make Richard Chase laugh.
Oh, Don Martin was devastated.
What if he found the right issue of Cosmo that taught him how to break the ice with that girl that he wanted to talk to?
I don't think Cosmo was that good.
He goes back to find Nancy Holden. He goes, it's like, I want to ask you about your interests. And also, I hear hot and cold on the vagina.
I don't think it's
going to work. Makes the orgasm stronger.
All right. I don't think it'll work.
On January 25th, a couple called police after they found one of their Labrador puppies dead on their rear patio, shot with its stomach ripped open. When police asked him if they'd seen any strange characters, they remembered a skinny, filthy man in an orange jacket who had bought two puppies from them days earlier.
I just don't understand. How are they selling puppies to this guy?
I mean, they just want to get rid of puppies.
There's so many people that want a puppy. Christmas is right around the corner.
Christmas had already passed. Yeah. These are puppies being given away.
Yeah, this is post-Christmas puppies. No one wants puppies in January.
It's depressing.
I'll take a puppy in January, and that's also a great new Lifetime movie, Puppies in January.
Puppies in January. Are they just food for vampires?
I hope not.
Lieutenant Biondi, acting on a hunch and remembering the reports people had made of the magazine hunter that fit the same description, he ordered an autopsy on the little pup and found fragments of a .22 bullet. Now, it wasn't enough to match it to the Wallen murder, but it was still a clue. It definitely wouldn't be enough, though, to catch Richard before he committed one of the worst murder sprees in American history. Ugh. Be prepared. It's Gold Star time.
It's Gold Star time! Does that, no, why does that ring like I'm talking to an empty graveyard?
It's just
this is what we do in the podcast, where we're going to test your patience as a human being and test your endurance as a compassionate human.
Well, right. Our listeners are very compassionate, wonderful people.
Yeah, extremely compassionate, wonderful people. That's why we say Gold Star, because that's pretty much just saying, like, hey, it's about to get real fucking bad.
Well,
right
we're
now.
All in it together. So I'm forced to be here.
What do they get in return for getting the gold star this
they
time?
They get a thumbs. They get a like on Facebook.
Yeah. We'll give them a like.
You get a like. You get a big old thumbs up, buddy.
If those Frankensteins are still around, I'll give you one of those.
No, they're gone. Halloween's over.
Fuck this!
Yep, it's all done now. So how long of a spree here are we talking, Marcus?
30, like, about 45 minutes.
It's
45
it.
Minutes.
So that's all is, you need. It's like Michael Jordan. All you need is one basketball game to make a career.
I believe you also equated Ted Bundy to Michael Jordan. So
I ended up using Michael Jordan a lot because he's the only athlete. I look up to him.
He's the only athlete you know.
Emmitt Smith.
All right.
Deion Sanders.
All from the mid-90s.
Yeah. And now
Bobby Bonilla.
Now you're just naming cowboys. Okay, he's from the Pirates.
Dwight Gooden.
That's fine. He had a small cocaine addiction. But that's all right. All right, 45 minutes. Bundy-esque, I suppose.
Yes. Now, Evelyn Miroff was a 38-year-old single mother who lived with her two sons, Vernon, 13, and Jason, 6, in the Country Club Center neighborhood of Sacramento. On January 27th, she was at home with her son Jason and her sister-in-law's 20-month-old baby boy. And on that day, Evelyn had planned to send her 6-year-old son along with a neighbor to play in the snow at the foot of the Sierra Nevada mountains, but the boy would never leave the house alive, thanks to Richard Chase. At 9.05 a.m., Evelyn's friend, Danny Meredith, came over to the divorcee's house in his red station wagon and was asked by Evelyn to go back out and rent some snowshoes for Jason to take on the trip. And after Danny left the house, Richard Chase entered through the unlocked back door, walked to the bathroom where Evelyn was taking a bath, and quickly shot her in the head, killing her instantly, just as he had done with Teresa Wallen. He then dragged the naked body out of the bathroom and laid her out on the bed. Now, while we don't know exactly what happened next, it is presumed that the 6-year-old son, Jason, heard the shot and came into the room to see what had happened. Chase shot the 6-year-old boy twice in the head at close range, left the body on the floor next to the bed, and walked to the kitchen to get a knife so he could repeat what he had done to Teresa Wallen. And as Richard was in the kitchen, he heard the front door open. It was Danny Meredith returning from the sporting goods store. Chase pulled the .22 out from his shoulder holster, met Danny in the hall, and shot him straight between the eyes. It's then that Richard noticed the sound of a crying baby coming from one of the rooms. He walked to the bedroom where the baby lay in its crib, pointed the gun at his head, and pulled the trigger. So Richard then returned to the bedroom, taking two carving knives from the kitchen with him, and began the same blood ritual he had performed on the corpse of Teresa Wallen. First, he cut open her stomach, sternum to navel, then cut again across her belly and pulled out the intestines. He stabbed her deliberately in specific organs, again, leaving only the kidneys unscathed, repeating what he had done the first time. He then took out the liver, cut off a piece, and ate it. After that, he pulled out the rest of the organs and collected as much blood as he could from the abdomen of Evelyn Miroff, again, just as he had done with Teresa. But this time, Richard decided to take it even further. He rolled Evelyn onto her stomach and stabbed her anus 6 times and sodomized the wound. He then rolled her back over, sliced her neck open, and carefully cut out one of her eyes. Now, Richard had done all he wanted with the body of Evelyn Miroff, but his work in the house was not done yet. He went back to the baby's room, brought the body into the bathroom, split the head open, and partially dumped the baby's brains into the bathtub. Now, suddenly, a knock came from the front door. The family across the street was still waiting for Jason to come over so they could head to the mountains, and the mother had sent her daughter to check on him. Thankfully, Richard did not open the door. Instead, he waited until the little girl left, took the keys to the red station wagon from Danny Meredith's body, and escaped unseen with a bucket of blood and the body of a 20-month-old baby. The crime scene would be discovered 30 minutes later when a worried neighbor opened the back door and saw Danny Meredith's corpse lying in the hallway.
Oh my, all right, so that's completely brutal. Absolutely.
You got a gold star! Aren't you happy with yourself?
All right, so there was 3 people that he murdered?
4.
4 people in this house?
Yeah, it was Evelyn Miroff, Danny Meredith, Jason Miroff, and the baby whose name has been kept out.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, and how long did this take?
About 45 minutes.
45 minutes. It was just boom, boom, because they all died really fast.
Right.
It was like that whole thing happened, and then he was just with the body.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting. I mean, again, it's not like BTK. He's not really torturing these people while they're alive. I mean,
no.
He's a weak piece of shit.
A piece of shit that just wants to total control over something. Also, if you look at the way he's mutilating the bodies, it's very childish. It's very much like a kid with a knife. He does not understand sexuality at all. You remember that he was born impotent. Like, basically, he could not have sex with anyone up until this point. Or God knows what he did on his own time in terms of, like, his masturbatory habits. But he, like, was stunted. He was trapped in sort of a psychopathic version of a 10-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. And that had a knife and was playing with a body like he was a fucking deformed orphan.
And now he's just driving around, which is horrifying to think about, this man behind the wheel of a car.
Listening to Light FM, because you know
he loves
Kenny Loggins.
Maybe.
Having a good time driving around. But like literally just driving back to the house in his ranchero, like just doot, 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 doot. I also really hope he didn't hum a song while he was doing
Who
all
knows?
This.
Who knows? I mean, at this point, I guess the switch is now off, right?
Yes. As soon as it happens, it seems like because
he gets in the car and it goes back on. He heads back home.
Oh, right. I guess that's where you go. I have this is insane.
Where do you want him to go to the baseball game?
I don't know. I want him to go to jail immediately, which I guess is the next step here.
Yeah, absolutely. See, police. They were at a loss, of course. Now, they, of course, knew that the same person who had killed Teresa Wallen had also committed the mass murder that had just occurred on that cold winter morn. Now, besides the obvious, the cops had also found the same rings on the carpet next to the body, the same footprints tracked through the blood, and bullets from the same gun. But Richard, in a very telling move that spoke volumes about his sense of right and wrong, had worn rubber gloves, so there were no fingerprints.
Also, he had dumped the ranchero, which you're going to find out, but that's like one little detail-y thing, is that he dumps the ranchero, because it's all within a mile around his apartment. He dumps it in like a weird place, like behind the Meredith's house, right? Where it's like, and it's parked across a bunch of parking lanes. He didn't actually drive away from the house in his ranchero. He stole Meredith's car.
Right.
He drove it to another apartment complex and parked it. He knew exactly what he was doing.
So he's kind of surprisingly sane in some ways.
I mean, he had, as far as somewhat of a preparation for the crime, he had a little bit of foresight. Just enough. He had just enough to cast a shadow of a doubt on the insanity defense.
Right.
Like, the fact that he wore gloves shows that he made some effort to not get caught.
Or he literally was like, all vampires wear gloves.
Honestly, who knows?
It's like he could have been wearing a top hat and fucking, you know, and scuba gear the whole time, too.
Knows?
Who knows what he's doing? He's just thinking, be like, I gotta make sure to keep my guts inside my own body just in case he doesn't jump into this dead woman's body.
Who knows?
Yeah, and police had also found Danny Meredith's car, but had nothing to link it to Chase. However, they would later find out that Chase had abandoned the car only 100 yards away from his own front door. I was kind of surprised there was no trail of blood leading out of the station wagon over into his apartment, because he was walking out with a bucket of blood and the corpse of a baby under his arm.
But the baby was wrapped up. Apparently, and then also the bucket. I mean,
I guess he was very careful not to spill any blood.
Also, you just put it on your upholstery. It's getting in the upholstery. It's kind of like putting it on a coaster.
I guess.
I don't know.
No, you don't know.
Now, we usually don't cover the hunt for the serial killer in our heavy hitter episodes in much detail because, frankly, most of the time, it's a happy accident that these killers are even caught. But this right here, this is top notch police work and deserves to be recognized as such.
Because,
round of applause.
And Lieutenant Biondi was actually not that long on the force. Like, he was like newer to the homicide branch.
Most of the guys on this case were either rookie detectives or very new detectives.
And so, a lot of times, I mean, like, they all talked about how they had to go into very deep therapy after finding these crime scenes. But, like, Biondi was like following hunches. And he kept checking in with an older officer, like, friend of his, which just sounds like a movie. There's got to be a movie of this at some point.
I wish there was.
I think there was. I forget. There may have been one. There was a weird little old thing that I saw called The Psychopathic World of Richard Chase, which is a 7-minute movie done with Barbie dolls. Not good.
It's not a movie.
Yes, right. And then he went in, but there's something about this dude. We like went to the older officer. He's like, "This is I'm putting together this whole case," and I was like, "I have a hunch that it's this Richard Chase guy." And he's like, "Follow your gut." It was cool.
Now, with no concrete leads, Lieutenant Biondi decided to try something new he had learned 2 years earlier at a seminar hosted by the FBI. He decided to try psychological profiling. Now, using techniques he had learned in combination with crime scene evidence and a few hunches, Biondi was able to make these assumptions. One, since no witnesses in the suburban white neighborhood had remembered seeing any minorities walking around, as this was admittedly the late 70s and people would have noticed, Biondi assumed that the killer was white.
And this is where racism works.
I guess, you know what? In a strange way, it did.
It's where it works. And the only real suspicious person who did show up in police reports was the skinny white fella in his 20s, so it was safe to assume that that was probably their guy. Two, Biondi thought that he was probably schizophrenic. The attacks were extremely disorganized and occurred in daylight with no real effort to cover the crimes besides just the gloves, and the crimes had been done with no real regard for witnesses.
Because people had seen him all day long. He was walking through people's yards in that he had a fucking bright orange ski park on.
Covered in blood, going door to door.
He had obviously broken from reality. I mean, the person that you could compare Richard Chase to is another Richard, Richie Ramirez.
Very similar to Richard Ramirez, but Richard Ramirez was even more sadistic. So Richard Ramirez was at least had his shit together a little bit more in his own head.
Well, Richard Ramirez wasn't schizophrenic.
No.
Like, he was just an asshole.
Yeah, he was just piece of shit, but Richard Chase was just obviously very, very sick, but also an asshole. Yeah. When you combine the two,
perfect storm.
You get a whole family dead.
Yeah, exactly. Now, three, Biondi decided that this guy was probably a loner, unmarried, and out of work. It was reasoned that nobody would be able to live with or employ someone who was capable of this.
Accurate.
Plus, the murders had occurred during regular work hours. Four, the killer probably had limited social skills and was no smooth talker.
This guy's no game show host.
He is nailing it so far.
Yeah, because there was no prolonged interaction with the victims, and the murders had been committed quickly so the perpetrator could keep control of the situation. He reasoned that the only way he was able to take any control of the situation was to just shoot him in the head as soon as possible.
Surprise them and shoot him.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And five, the perpetrator had probably been recently released from a mental institution due to the nature of the crimes. They had also occurred within a short period of time in one area, suggesting that the perpetrator was a newcomer to the area.
Ding, 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 ding,
this
ding,
guy,
ding.
Five for five. Jackpot.
For five. Yep, this profile fit Richard Chase to a T, and the FBI often holds up the Chase case as the gold standard of a disorganized killer profile, and they take a lot of credit for that. There's only one problem. The FBI was not involved in this case in the least bit.
This is Sacramento
at all.
This is Sacramento
their rules
PD.
Were, but well, their ideas were, and their ideas for law enforcement.
Their ideas, but the FBI takes credit for solving the Richard Chase case. They take credit for the caller. They take credit for the arrest. They did not. Arrest. They did not
they
call
They created a methodology that led to the arrest. I understand
this
the
is
FBI
thing.
A little bit.
Are you coming down on the side of the FBI?
I'm going to. I don't want
He's
to be
changed.
Indicted.
He's changed.
No, because without that man going to the seminar and having the FBI teach him about profiling, then maybe he wouldn't have gone there mentally, and then the case wouldn't have been solved.
If the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were to come and to save me from the Foot Clan, I would thank Leonardo and not Splinter. So there we go.
I would thank Splinter.
Well, that's where you're
well, you know
who
we really have to thank? We have to thank Shredder.
Well, they,
because without
the
enemy, there is no good guy.
The psychological profile helped. It did help, but it by no means solved the case.
Okay.
There was a very, very strong chance that they still would have caught Richard Chase had they not had the psychological profile, had they not used this. And I think it is a huge disservice to the Sacramento Police Department for the FBI to claim that their psychological profile led to the capture of this killer, because that's what they do. You read Robert Ressler's book. If you read a lot of summations of this case and other serial killer books, they all imply that it was the FBI that caught this guy because of the psychological profile. It was not the FBI at all. It was the Sacramento Police Department.
All right, well, let's give credit where credit is due.
But this is also the common thing we talk about with the reason why these crimes aren't busted more quickly, more often. It's because of the miscommunication between the higher levels of police departments and the local levels. It's like, right, because they all are fighting for who gets credit, that's a lot of time why these killers slide through the cracks, because nobody wants to share information for them, because everyone wants the collar. Nobody wants to actually work together as a group, because that's where your funding comes from, is what is the basically the outline. Like, look at our numbers. This is who we break down.
That's so all changed now, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Now, at any one time, there were over 50 cops canvassing neighborhoods asking about suspicious persons. And again, the same tall, skinny, filthy man in his 20s wearing an orange jacket came up. But according to Biondi, this wasn't extremely helpful in the search because, as we said earlier, remember, this is California in 1978. There were a lot of tall, skinny, dirty guys walking around Sacramento.
Right.
Nevertheless,
there's literally like 15 Grateful Dead cover bands just in the Sacramento area alone.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Walton and Phil Jackson were, they looked the exact same, and they were professional basketball players.
Nevertheless, they were still able to make a sketch and send it out. They also knew that the killer had used a .22 semi-automatic, but the problem there lied in the fact that .22 semi-automatics were among the most popular guns sold at the time and were in fact known for their reputation as murder weapons. The lucky break came when Richard's high school friend, Nancy Holden, the one who Richard had harassed and possibly planned to kill at the supermarket on the day of the Wallen murder, told her police officer father-in-law about the incident after seeing the sketch of the scraggly stranger.
That's so sad. He was just having a Dawson's Creek moment with Nancy, and that's the thing that made the whole thing fall apart. He was there saying all he wanted to ask her was, I wish that you were the one to ask me out on the Sadie Hawkins dance.
I don't think that she wanted to ask him out.
Now, Biondi started looking into Chase specifically, because, as Henry said earlier, he had one hell of a hunch, and found that Chase had a concealed weapon arrest on his record for a .22, which alone would have been enough for them to look into it, that he had spent time in a mental institution where he was described as a violent patient, and they uncovered the bloody incident at Pyramid Lake. So really, if you look at it, as far as the profile goes, really the only thing that actually fits that they actually have in the check-in was that he spent time in a mental institution. The concealed weapon arrest for the .22 and the blood incident at Pyramid Lake, that alone is enough for them to look into it. So it was the sacrament. Yes.
Yeah. They should have been looking into it from the fucking beginning. He should have been in a mental institution.
What happened? Did you just turn into the honeymooner?
I just get like, it's like,
what the hell's the name of the honeymooner guy?
Ralph Cramden?
Yeah, you just turned into Ralph Cramden.
I just don't really understand how a man just, you know, he had a bucket of guts driving around saying I'd rather be flying.
I know, I'm surprised that he's able to get away at all, but yes, interesting.
Now, detectives found out where Richard lived, drove over, and knocked on the door. Richard didn't answer, but they were certain that he was inside, not wanting to
come. Not home! Certainly not home! Yum, yum, yum.
Now, not wanting to compromise the scene by entering without a warrant, the officers made a big show of acting like they were going to leave and come back later.
There
was a lot of theater
going
there. A guy with coconuts? like Monty Python?
Time to drive away. We're going to the Burger King. I know how much you like Burger King. Frum, 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 frum.
They're just hiding behind the bushes.
They were.
Hello, amazing.
Yeah, they were waiting around the corner of the building.
Did they catch him with a net?
With any luck, he's a cartoon.
Yeah, they waited for him to emerge, and sure enough, just a few minutes later, Chase walked outside carrying a cardboard box.
Oh, no.
The cops yelled, "Stop! Come back here!" Chase threw the box at one of the officers, and a whole rush of bloody pieces of paper flew out of the cardboard box. That's all that was inside.
Oh,
just little bloody pieces of paper.
Vampire pinata. Disgusting.
Yeah. Chase took off in one direction as one cop was chasing him. The other cop came around the corner and bashed him in the head with his gun. Chase immediately fell to the ground. The cop thought that he had killed the guy, but when he went down to put the cuffs on him, Richard started struggling around, and this is when that, like, the cop was like, holy shit, I couldn't get a hold of the guy.
One last dance!
It's a horror
movie. One last dance of freedom!
This is the final scene of a horror film. You think you killed a monster, it turns out you didn't.
Yeah, and the cop said, like, the entire time, Richard was trying to reach into his jacket to try to get the gun out so he could shoot him.
Just shoot this guy in the head!
Yeah, but he was trying to get the collar. Like, he was trying to actually arrest, and he also couldn't get to his own gun while he was trying to hold Richard down.
The arresting officer had a really nice interview moment where he said, I was pulling the, the guy that actually arrested Richard Chase was chasing him down, originally thought, when I see this guy, I'm going to pull out my gun, I'm going to shoot him, I'm going to kill him. But he said, no, at the very last minute, if I kill him, then I'm like him.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like him.
Well, only if he cuts up the corpse and drinks his blood.
Well, that's the extreme version.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it actually sounds like these were some pretty good cops that were taking this guy down. And so they finally got the handcuffs on Richard Chase.
Ugh.
They searched him. In his back pocket, they found Danny Meredith's wallet. In his shoulder holster was the .22 semi-automatic. Most disturbingly, though, they also found pictures of Jason and Evelyn Miroth in his pocket that Richard had taken from their house after the murder. And when cops finally got a warrant for Richard's apartment, they discovered a scene that is... His apartment is exactly what you'd expect it to be.
I can't believe he had track lighting. Disgusting. How tasteless.
Now, almost everything in the apartment was stained with either dried blood or fresh blood, down to a loaf of French bread that was sitting on the couch next to his blood-soaked sleeping bag.
He just thought it was marinara sauce.
I guess so.
Now, there were small bits of bone in the kitchen, and in the fridge, they found the body parts of animals on dishes and human brain tissue stored in a container.
Jeez.
And the blender was badly stained and smelled of rotting flesh.
That's where I always find, like, one thing I like about, like, watching various serial killer, like kind of slap together documentaries, is that every single time I've watched one of these, all the ones that are like 10 to 12 minutes long, whenever they talk about Richard Chase, they cut to a clip art of a runner drinking a smoothie, which I think is like bad press
for
smoothies.
I think it's gross. It is bad press for the smoothie.
What do you think? You're a blender guy, Ben. Or you were a blender
guy. I was
guy
a blender.
Until you broke your blender.
Yeah, my blender broke because I put ice in it.
Yeah.
Not human corpses.
You can just throw rabbits into a blender all day long, but you put ice in there and it's going to break.
I guess
you were really overusing this blender.
I guess I was. I was not nearly as nice as Richard Chase was with his wonderful blender, apparently.
Babies are soft.
It is disgusting to think about him just jamming whatever he jammed into that blender. It's so strange. And then he just goes and eats a bunch of French bread and watches television.
Definitely would have been a very morbid commercial.
Oh, God.
They also found anatomy textbooks, health magazines, a marked-up psychology article titled Under Stimulation, a classified section with all the ads for dogs circled, and a spiral notebook.
But they just didn't know that inside the notebook it was just constant drawings of MASH. You know that game, that childhood game?
I don't know MASH.
Oh, I thought you meant MASH like that, like there were pictures of Radar.
Yeah, the television show.
Like,
I know about that.
Radar and
I
Hawk.
I love
like
Alan Alda!
Alan Alda's a good guy.
I love him so much. I wonder if he's got enough blood in him. He looks like he does.
He does, I'm sure.
Now, the notebook was filled with handwritten notes and drawings of guns, obscene images, and swastikas, as well as translations of German words. That's one thing that we didn't cover about Richard Chase.
He's a neo-Nazi?
No, he thought Nazis were after him.
Yes.
Yeah. He wasn't Jewish.
He thought Nazis were putting radios in his soap. Like, there was like, that was a part of, they thought his mom was in line with them, that they were, she was selling him out. He was obsessed with Nazis.
Yeah, and the Nazis were working in conjunction with the UFOs.
See?
UFOs.
UFOs.
Interesting.
Unidentified flying objects. So I have to start calling him by the full name.
UFO.
Now, One page had Richard's signature 12 times.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And I did that as a kid.
Yeah, you're practicing when he's a celebrity.
You know, I did that too. I, you know, practiced my signature.
Me and Mrs.
That.
Vlad Dracul. Mr. Richard Dracul.
Now, besides all the gore and the carnage, the most disturbing thing cops found was a calendar. And on the dates of the Wallen and Meerith murders, Richard had written the word today. He had written the same word on 44 more dates in the coming year. And he had done it twice. And who knows when the next one would have come. So this shows that Richard Chase did have some plan.
Right.
Like, he did. It wasn't just that he woke up that day and said, today is the day I'm going to kill. He planned the day he was going to go out and kill. It really was. It's like, Tuesday is magazine day. Wednesday is dog day.
But
Thursday is
calendar.
Murder day.
Let's put it this officially.
His own version of The Secret.
Yeah, but he did not have a script. So he didn't have like a schedule supervisor. You know what I mean? It's like he wasn't handed the schedule down. He made the schedule
up.
Well,
he didn't have to clock in or anything.
No, that's the best part about being a vampire is that you're also an entrepreneur.
So... Yeah, did he self-identify as a vampire?
No, he didn't
self-identify. Okay, so at no point did he pretend to be a vampire.
No.
He just was.
No, not, yeah, he just was a vampire. No, he didn't go around saying, I'm a vampire, I don't need, you know, I need blood to survive. He thought that he needed blood because he was losing his blood. It was like the disorder that we were talking about in the last episode where, you know, they believe that certain body parts are missing. There are some serial killers who believe that they are vampires, that, you know, they are closer to like Vlad Dracul.
Yeah.
Richard really didn't give a shit about any of that stuff. He was obsessed with anatomy and Nazis. He didn't read Dracula.
That's kind of cool then, because then he was like the real punks versus pop punk. He was for real.
Yeah, he's like he is definitely like a proto-vampire.
All right, so what happens to this guy? They got him alive.
Yeah, so Richard Chase's insanity defense was rejected by a jury, and on May 8th, 1978, Chase was found guilty and sentenced to death.
Also, while he was in jail, there's two little tidbits. One is that when he would lie in the cells, when the jailers come by, he would hide under the covers and then pop out going, ah! Like, he would like make like weird little noises.
Wait, he played peekaboo?
Yes, with the jailers. And then also, when he got in there, of course, his reputation preceded him. And because he was a baby killer, all of the people on death row would collect jars of urine. They would piss into cups and get it to the guy closest to his cell to splash it all over Richard Chase while he laid in bed.
That's just kind of a fun. That's a jailhouse game.
Yeah,
they get very comfortable with their own waste.
It's called the apple juice pass.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you shit in the same room that you sleep in.
But isn't that something that Chase would enjoy?
Nah, he wasn't a pee pee poo poo guy.
Okay,
I mean he liked to pee pee poo poo, but I don't think he liked to smear himself in pee pee poo.
This is disgusting.
Yeah, it's just like that's the. It doesn't anyway. All right, so
guys, I go pretty far, but this is even
This is too much for me.
All right.
No, Chase would not meet his end in the gas chamber as the state intended. On the day after Christmas, 1980, Richard Chase, egged on by his fellow inmates, took a handful of antidepressants that he had been hoarding from his daily dose and died on death row from toxic ingestion.
A fate too good.
Way too good.
That's
actually kind of, I mean, never do that, but not the worst way.
Yeah, he did not deserve a peaceful death.
No.
So this guy was real fucked up.
He was awful. All right. Well, wow. Richard Chase. Great research. Interesting, to say the least. I guess keep your doors locked.
Yeah.
There's like literally one thing you can learn from this is that this shit happens. Like, this man was very scary.
It is extremely, extremely rare that it happens.
Lock your doors.
Yeah, that's all we can say. Lock your doors. The boogeyman isn't necessarily real. This is extremely rare. Don't let yourself stay up at night thinking about Richard Chase. But, you know, make sure your fucking back door's locked.
How didn't he die from consuming all animal blood and other people's blood? Doesn't that kill you?
Well, he did get blood poisoning at one point.
Time.
Yeah, from injecting it. Yeah.
I eat organ meat all the time, and my blood is thick and strong and healthy.
No, you're not healthy.
Yeah,
I'm very healthy.
Yeah, but have you seen, like, I mean, people eat weird shit and they survive. Have you ever seen that guy on YouTube? His name's like Shoe Man or something. Where he like eats the sticks of deodorant.
He's just a raging alcoholic.
Yeah, he's just a raging alcoholic, but he survives. So Richard can survive.
For now.
Humans are very adaptable.
Yeah. Oh, right. Richard Chase.
And anything can be food.
I guess so. I guess so.
And, of course, thank you to Christina, the psychology expert, and Megan for...
Sure, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thanks to Christina.
Yeah, Christina exists.
Christina, let me ask you a question. What's your address? Like, do you, like, where would you live?
7943463.
Just numbers. Those are just numbers.
94 way.
Great improv, Marcus. Christina, everybody. Great appearance. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Learned a little bit as well.
I hope you learned.
That's important to learn.
I mean, there's some stuff to learn here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've learned.
Thank you so much for all the wonderful comments and things like that on the Facebook group and on the Facebook page. And go and review us and rate us. 5 stars if you love us on iTunes. That would really help us out quite a bit. And we can finally claim the number one spot.
Just do that. You know what I mean? 5 stars are nothing.
I'll take 4.
4 stars are fine?
No, Marcus. 5 stars are nothing. That would be really great. Go out there. I don't know, you know? That's all we're asking.
Are you having a mental breakdown?
No.
It sounds like you're having a mental breakdown.
No, it's not like we're out here flying without a net.
We don't need a net when you got nimble feet like ours. Yeah. You don't need a net.
You don't need a net when you have friendship.
That's right.
Oh, God.
You are aging dramatically.
I am.
Yes. But thank you guys so much for listening, and thanks so much for supporting all the shows here on CCR. Thank you so much for supporting our Patreon page as well. It really is life-changing stuff.
Absolutely.
I finally listened to an episode of Wizard and the Bruiser, and Holden seems like normal on it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to check that out or not.
It's kind of disconcerting, but it's very good. It's a very good, well-researched show.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Check out Wizard and the Bruiser, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, Roundtable of Gentlemen, The Lucky Bone Show, Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities, and, you know, all the other shows that Marcus does such a great job of bringing over to Cave Comedy Radio.
Well, as far as live shows go, we still have tickets on sale for Seattle, Washington on Friday, December 16th at Numos. There's only about 50 tickets left on that.
Okay.
And it is it's over a month until the show goes on. That show will sell out. And Do not sit on your hands on that one.
And if you are one of the last 10 tickets purchased, Marcus himself will give you a full leg massage.
Yeah.
A full leg massage? One leg?
You know what? Myself, I prefer leg massages over anything. I'm a tight man on my legs. I hold a lot of my stress in my legs.
I didn't even mean to do this.
No, but you did do it. You definitely did.
On Saturday, December 17th, Portland, Oregon at Mississippi Studios, we sold out the late show, but we have added an early show. Go to cavecomedyradio.com/live for tickets there. And on Saturday, January 7th, Boston, Massachusetts, we sold out of the late show, but guess what? We are adding an early show. So we will be announcing that very soon, as soon as we get the tickets on. And also, we've got a couple more confirmed dates, but tickets are not on sale yet. We're coming to Chicago, and we're coming to San Francisco.
Awesome.
San Francisco.
Quick update, Pudgy the Mouse. I saw him last night. He's doing great.
Just living with no gas and literally living with vermin crawling around.
Is that a vermin?
That is vermin. It is vermin.
No, it's not.
It's a New York City rat. It's a mouse. But you are living in the Richard Chase version of Cinderella. I just want you to
let
you know.
That's not even close to true.
You're not gaining his trust. This thing's not going to start doing stuff around the house for you.
Well, he doesn't have to because I don't make a mess.
Yeah, but you know, next month he's going to be like Mr. Jangles in the Green Mile. He's going to be like a little cage. Oh, Mr. Jagers, he's a trick mouse.
He's a trick mouse.
He's a good mouse. Yes, thank you guys so much. And I'm going to throw out there, hail yourselves. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan, truly and deeply.
Oh, and don't forget about the live stream, Friday, 7:30. Check it out.
Yeah, you fuckers.
Well, don't yell at them.
I'm sorry, you're fuckers. I'm sorry.
AdultSwim.com/stream. Hail Gein. See y'all on Friday, and we'll see y'all next week.
Kill me, you fucking cocksuckers. Magustalations. If Henry can survive this week.
I will not.
All right. We're rolling. Everybody, welcome to this week's
Patreon.
How
did you just start this?
Everybody.
What happened?
Everybody, we're going to do this week's Patreon shout-outs. Benjamin, take it away.
We're going to do a Patreon shout-out.
Shout-outs. Now we're all just channeling Holden McNeely.
Yeah.
Shout out!
Shout out!
Seriously, from the bottom of my heart, every name that I read, I thank you all so much. That's good.
Very sincere.
Very sincere.
Thank you so much. All right, first name, Wolfgang Folks.
Ooh.
Sounds like a chef, but he only makes foxes. Who only cooks fox meat? Ryan Ream. That is Peter Antill. Brent Ills. I think it's Ills. You know, with a capital I and a lowercase L, they're the same letter.
Oh.
I never liked that.
I'm sorry.
The capital I and the lowercase, it's the same letter.
Yeah.
It's confusing to
people. Well, the L is a little shorter than the I.
Huh? I've never seen that.
William Zoth. Sarah Davis. Chai Eaton. Katie Toon. Kate Sabalo.
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 Kate Sabalo. Jesper Uldall. Adam Rhodes. Robin Campbell. John Atkins. Michelle M. Hodges. She just gave us a lot of information. Thank you so much for your support. Let's see here. Katie Guidry. Thank you, Katie. Fernando Prado.
Oh, we know Fernando Prado. Hell, Satan.
Ben Thomas. Sylvia Vahalo. Vahalo.
Vahala.
Vahalo. Huh. I'm getting much better.
Yeah.
Vahalo.
Yes. Kinda.
Yeah. Aaron Towns. Thank you. Catherine Campbell. Adrian Shipley. Dan Jones, Charles Nicholson, Paul Everett, Allison Cantrell, thank you so much.
Hey.
Jeremy Nicholas, Amber Powers, Ryan McDonald, Arkelly Gonzalez, Simon Colley, Justin Lejeune.
Lejeune.
Lejeune. That's a French one. Phil Wadey. That's an American one.
Yes.
Tim Perham, Carolyn Stewart, Chad Miller, Gregory Bevington, Dan Strauss, Kelly Kirst, Allison Schober, Kate Russell, Elise Murphy, Nathan Kruger, John Harper, Ashley Craig, and Lucas Reagan. Thank you guys so much.
Hail Satan. I would like to thank Stephanie Gorgeous. Ooh. TJ Gomez, what's up?
Hey, TJ.
Tiny Hamster. That's, you shouldn't be on a computer, you're an animal. Caitlin Smith, Andrea York, Nicolette Moreau, I know you, hey.
Andrea York, hey.
Angela Davila, Caitlin Stanbro, Jacob Brinkman, Brittany Neville,
I'm Brittany Neville.
Laura Zielinski, yeah, Polish, yeah. Disney Ray, Wade Pratha, David Gallagher, Rob P. as in urine, Emmeline Williams, Amanda Lord. That's me turning into what's his name from Saturday Night Live. Amanda Lord, Richie Unrein, Andrew Coyle, Charlie Weatherholt, Daniel Gaudet, John Lindsay, Reverend Jesus H. Christ. How was it having sex with all of those 12 men you dragged around, you fucking wizard? Scott Estep, Clinton Davies.
Did you say Scott Stapp?
Estep. No, not Scott Stapp. I wish.
That would be great.
I would expect more money from him.
I would expect less.
Mary Rose, Cameron McKinley, Skate Canada, Kennedy, Jameson Hurls, Mike Freeman, Derek Dunn, Devin Weiss, Darren Fleischer, Andrew President Lincoln, Annalise Delhol, Nikki Baron, Emily Kolb, Paul Brach, Christopher Wilde, Austin Garrett, Stephen Cook, Justin D as in D's Nuts, Michael Oxley, Tom Hutton, and Hannah Memlis.
I have Angela Felton, Nolan H., the Liz Benoit crew.
Ooh.
Oh, man, it'd be fun to have a whole crew.
Whole crew.
Lisa Cheatham, Roop Grove, Jonathan Tony Hurdy, Squid DeVille, Alden Evoke, Daniel Morton, Leonid Levchenko, Megan Duvall, Mark Limburg.
Limburg!
Limburg! James Stewart. Oh, James Stewart.
I wish I could be on the show last podcast on the left. Instead, I killed my family.
Zoe Hatch, Christian Story, Lauren Macharoni, Shani Zamora, Jeffrey Ballou, hey Jeffrey, Alana Watson, Paul Redding, Bridget O'Malley, Mike Reinhalter, Nathaniel Barter, Saicio.
Saicio?
Saicio. Russ Frobiter. Sorry. Shelby Schultz. Melissa Coulson. Skylar Berge. Megan Kolar. Amanda Tuel. Sean Warden. Skandor Akbar.
Skandor Akbar.
Chad Stewart. Brian E. Clark. Alyssa Sable. Amanda Manoffo. Ludwig Hornstrom. A.
David Blood.
David Blood.
Zach McAllister. Christina Huntwerk. Raven Hurtle. Robin Hardwick. Dave Balby. Alan Shinkunas. Theodoric Ripper. Kate Kurt Manor. And Louis Gaudet.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your money.
Of course, thank you very much, everybody.
Give me your money.
Who gives to our Patreon. If you would like to give, even a dollar helps. And a dollar gets you a shout out. Go to patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left. Thank you guys so very much. And we've actually got some very cool new content coming out for the Patreon exclusively.
Just you.
We'll talk about it on the show. We'll announce it. It's super cool stuff, and it will be coming soon.
All over you soon. Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Hail yourselves, I guess.
Yeah.
Hail me.
And a megustalations.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.